This is KUT. I'm Emily Donahue for the Texas Standard. Station 11 is the new novel from Emily St. John Mendel. The buzz around this book is huge. A starred review from Kirkus, bestseller status on the LA and New York Times, finalist for the National Book Award, and yet for all the noise it has generated, this book is overwhelmingly quiet. It's a penetrating quiet, like the quiet that comes after everything's covered by new fallen snow, or, you know, the quiet in church where you can hear the sounds of the world outside, but inside you're blanketed with silence. Emily St. John Mendel, thank you so much for coming to KUT to talk about this book.
Thank you for interviewing me.
So listeners who haven't heard the buzz might be surprised to learn this book, as quiet as I geared it up to be, is about a post-apocalyptic world.
It is. When people ask me what the book's about, I usually go with it's about a traveling Shakespearean theater company in a post-apocalyptic North America. But that's a bit of an elevator pitch, and I always feel as though I'm selling the book a little bit short, because really about half of it, or maybe more like 40%, takes place in a world that's more or less the present day. And you know, follows a lot of very non-apocalyptic themes, like celebrity and our obsession with objects and terrible dinner parties, friendship, knife throwing.
Yeah, so there's a seriously terrible dinner party in there.
There is a seriously terrible dinner party, yeah. Yeah.
And yet, this boat...
It's hard to say.
It is. The thing that turned the world into the apocalypse that it is in the novel is sort of extremely timely, given...
It is, unfortunately. Yeah, it's a flu pandemic, which I picked purely because the flu seems like such a horrifically plausible way to end the world. And if you want to write a post-apocalyptic novel, of course, you have to end civilization somehow. So, you know, your options, you can make it a nuclear holocaust, but then you've written an explicitly political novel, which is a very different thing. So it seemed to me that the flu was just a very plausible way of doing it, of bringing civilization to a close in my book.
So what do you think of the panic going on right now? I mean...
It's horrific. You know, Ebola is such a terrible thing. It's interesting. When you read a bit about the history of pandemics, which I did as I was writing the book, you begin to realize that if you write a book about a premise where a civilization falls to disease, you're really just writing an exaggeration, let's say, of a non-fictional premise. And you know, I've written about this a little bit in essays and such, but as I was reading about the history of humanity's, say, long waltz with pandemics, you could call it, you know, it's something that's recurred in our history again and again and again, I came across this one story in particular that really haunts me. In the middle of the 18th century, Captain George Vancouver sails up the west coast of the land that will later become Canada. And as they sail northward, he and his crew begin to notice that the land seems uncannily empty. You know, this is a lovely climate. It's completely temperate, fertile land. But there just aren't any people. They go ashore and they find villages that are capable of housing hundreds of people, but nobody's there. They begin to find human skeletons on the beach. And when they do eventually find the very few survivors of the native population there, they have terrible stories and pockmarked skin, because smallpox has already arrived. So as I was writing this book, I was very aware of that history of successive pandemics, you know, smallpox, bubonic plague, flu, et cetera, et cetera. And in a strange way, it makes the current Ebola epidemic seem no less terrible, but not like such a huge coincidence, you know, that my book and Ebola are happening about the same time, just because this is something that happens to us again and again and again. And it's very much a part of our history.
Well, and then the other thing that you have in here, and forgive me if I'm read too deeply, but this book had sort of stories circling other stories, right?
And, absolutely, yeah.
And of course, the book Station 11 is kind of at the middle of all of the stories.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then you have this sort of anchor of the Yeats poem, The Second Coming. I don't know if I've overread here, but...
No, I think that's reasonable. I love that poem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, you know, so it starts with a reference to a gyre, which is a circle, and it's sort of a whirlpool or even a swarm of ghosts. And this book
is kind of... And the center doesn't hold and things do fall apart.
You know, Jeevan, I think he says the center cannot hold. And then
I think he does.
Wow. And then so he was writing in the flu pandemic, because that poem was published in 1919.
Right.
And was that deliberate, or?
That was not deliberate, that timing of the publication of the poem. That's just one of those phrases, or I guess it's two phrases in that poem, you know, things fall apart and the center cannot hold. Yeah. It's just such an incredibly vivid, perfect image for collapse.
As I prepared for this interview, I read that you had written an essay in defense of quiet books, and I didn't realize that you had written that until after I had prepared and written my lead, and then I thought, oh my gosh, that's so funny. So did you have that sense in your brain as you were writing that you were searching for
a sense of quiet? What I was trying to do, and I tried this a little bit in my previous novels too, which were in somewhat of a different vein, but each of them featured a crime. And, you know, it's funny, I always set out to write literary fiction with the strongest possible plot, and that can kind of push you over into genre. So my previous books are sometimes called crime fiction, sometimes called literary fiction. This one's sometimes called sci-fi because it's set partly in the future. And what I've tried to do in all four books is write about deadly serious topics with a certain lightness of touch. Because I feel like if you're writing about something as vast and horrific as the end of the world, and, you know, the premise of this book is that 99% of the population dies, if you're overwrought about that and you're hitting the reader over the head with the nightmare of it, it's just too much. It's unreadable, in my opinion. So I suppose a sense of quiet isn't a bad way of putting what I was trying to do, which was convey the horror in as understated a manner as possible.
And this sense of emptiness, but not emptiness in a scary way, but emptiness as a sort of, not even peaceful, but emptiness is sort of a character in this book.
It is. The incredible peacefulness, and you hesitate to put any kind of a positive spin on an epidemic, but the incredible quiet of a world in which almost everyone's gone. And it was an interesting thing to consider as I was writing it, that of course it would be horrific and unspeakable, and even if you survive, maybe you wouldn't want to, you know, your family would probably be gone. But also it would be beautiful. There would be this incredible quiet, and the image I had was of cities being taken over by forest. You know, we've all seen cracked parking lots with weeds and flowers coming through. And imagining that exaggerated to the point of, you know, the whole world, trees running down the center of streets and deer grazing and in plazas downtown. It's an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. We follow one character as he sets out into this super peaceful world.
Right, the silent landscape is the line that comes up. Yeah.
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 So you wrote this book about peace and a sense of wonder and almost renewal, but not quite, from New York City.
I did.
Was it impossible to imagine? Yeah. No, it couldn't have been because you did
imagine that piece. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about how the environment might impact the book. I feel such peace when I'm in my office working.
You must have good windows.
I have great windows. Yeah. That helps. A very peaceful office.
So let me ask you, what is it like to be at the center of this whirlwind around your novel? I mean, it must be very exciting.
It's extraordinary. I'm so grateful. You know, it's my fourth book, but the first three were with a very small press, and they were so good. I am so grateful to them for everything they did. But it was just a vastly different scale, and I never had anything close to the kind of attention that Station 11's gotten. You know, the National Book Award nomination is extraordinary is the word I keep using, but that's the word.
It's kind of hard to follow up.
It's incredible. I'm so grateful to have this opportunity to find so many readers for my work, which is something I've been wanting for a really long time, to find more readers. And here they all are. You know, I've been on tour for almost 6 weeks, so I'm having a really hard time keeping up with email. But that's really the only downside. It's been incredible.
So say you get the award.
Theoretically.
How does one follow up? I mean, you already working on something?
I am working on something.
From the piece of the road?
No, I'm trying to work on something quite different. You know, it's a good question. Perhaps it's naive of me to think that winning that award would just be an incredible burst of renewed confidence and could only help your next project. I don't have an expectation of winning. You know, everybody, anyone on that list could win, and they're all extraordinary. I've been reading through their books.
So good company.
Good company. Yeah, it's an honor to be among them.
Good books to read while you're on tour.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes. Yeah, and I've run into a couple of them on tour, which has been
lovely.
Fun? It's really fun. Yeah, and you know, you see them, and it's like, oh, you're that guy from that list. Like, hi. And, everybody's been so friendly. It's been lovely.
You have a novel that you're working on.
I do, yeah.
And you will be at the Capitol for the Texas Book Festival tomorrow.
I will. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock, I'll be with Eden Lopucki, who wrote California, that post-apocalyptic book that got the Colbert bump, which is really wonderful for her.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming by KUT on your way to the Capitol.
Well, thank you for interviewing me. It was a pleasure.
Emily St. John Mandel is the author of Station 11, and she'll be at the Capitol tomorrow at 3 o'clock. For the Texas Standard, I'm Emily Donahue, KUT News.